Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, as always, Brandon Pham. And with me, a returning and monthly guest, Ray Graham. How you doing, dude?
What's up? I'm here. What's up? How you doing?
You're here, so the party can start. All right, man, we're out of the woods.
I got my drink. You know, I got my drink for the party right here. This is
how all parties were for the last year and a half. We're almost out of the woods. I mean, I have friends. You have friends. I have my first shot of the vaccine. I don't know you're there yet.
I have had my first shot of the vaccine, and I get my second shot at the end of the month.
Yeah. I got you beat there. I'm getting mine very soon, like next week.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, it just means that they care about me more to kind of further the human race.
I heard about the privileged getting early vaccine shots. So I figured you'd get some.
Yeah, man, of course. And if you want to keep the world going, the most important people gotta do it. The movers. But I'm just glad, dude. It feels real. The fam went from 0 to 100 pretty fast. My family all got the Johnson & Johnson. I got the Pfizer, so I'm the only one that has to wait for the second shot.
Nice.
So they're one and done. No blood clots. So it's right before that whole thing happened. But it was cool, man. It was nice to kind of like saw some friends in LA, went to a museum. Didn't go as hard, but at least considering how little we did that past year, we went pretty hard. We went ham. We ate ramen in a restaurant for the first time for a year. Okay.
I've been to a restaurant outdoors.
Yeah.
Twice, I think.
Yeah, I haven't done anything. But it was kind of great to kind of do that and feel nice and normal again. Really appreciate it. And I think what's funny, game dev related, is you're starting to see a lot of these companies doing like a full reversal. I think you kind of like were hinting at this, where these companies are like, yeah, remote all the time forever, right? And then as soon as like the vaccine started to take up, they're like, no, everyone back in the office, special case scenario, you know, if you have special reasons. Yeah. And what's funny is a lot of people have left, you know, their city, some even permanently moved, and are loving that life. So there seems to be like a slow return back in the office, but definitely it seems like most companies want people back in the office. Unfortunately, a little hybrid here and there, but I think the majority of the big companies want people back in their office. Are you hearing about the same?
I haven't heard anything like that from the actual companies themselves. I just know what you know my company's doing. And, you know, it's kind of a hybrid approach where it's like, you know, some people are really digging working home, and so. Maybe we should give people option to continue doing that, right? And then other times, you know, sometimes you do want to face to face, or you do want human contact. You do want to be in your office and talk to people. And so, you know, coming up with ways of doing a hybrid approach, like a lot of people are starting to think about that right now. But I haven't heard anything about what the video game companies are doing like currently.
Yeah, I think it's mostly been Google who did like a major Return reversal. I think Facebook is kind of doing the same thing. The game division, thought, at least I've, that side.
Oh, I thought Facebook was like, you can work wherever you want, and we got you.
Yeah. Well, at least I heard for the Oculus team, it wasn't the same. Yeah. Like they were, they're trying to roll everyone back.
Yeah.
Because game development's hard, man. It's really tough. really, really. Really hard not to be around people and do the things that we do. And although there are infrastructures in place, like we said before, that's going to be very good for people who are talented that has this access without having to move. So I think it's still there. Regardless, I do want to jump into this month's roundtable news. So, Ready Player One Fortnite, right? That seems to be one of the most exciting things that I've heard. And makes sense, right? I mean, in terms of Epic, they have Fortnite going. They're going strong. What is the next thing, right? It's been dwindling for the past couple years, month to month, right? Fighting Apple and spending money. So, what are your feels about this? Have you heard about this metaverse, this world that they're trying to build and securing... this is the exclusives. Let me actually.
Yeah, hold on. One. Hold on. Have I heard about the metaverse? Now,
many times.
Unless I was under a rock, I would have not have heard of like every single company right now is trying to create a metaverse. Right? Yeah,
but for real. who's closest?
No.
Yeah.
Well, no, every company is literally trying to make a metaverse, right? Like,
of course.
Right now, everybody saw Roblox and they're like, oh, word. Right. And they're trying to capitalize on that. Right. So Epic's in there with Fortnite. Manticore Games just did a big launch of Core on the Epic Game Store. And it's actually built on Unreal Engine. So that's pretty interesting. Their metaverse is also, you can mess around and download it right now off of the Epic Game Store as of like literally today. Right. So, So like everybody's trying to get in on the action and there's more players coming into that. Like everybody's like, oh wait, is this yet another model to do free to play, have microtransactions, games as a service, and also enable creators, right? Like there's games before that, like Little Big Planet, Minecraft, that were empowering the creators. And so now everybody, it seems like I'm hearing more and more about more companies rushing to create this metaverse, right?
Yeah, and to kind of clue people in, Core's through Game School Online, we did like a partnership last year. We did like Game Jam, so I know the people at Core. Back then, you know, they had like good venture funding, so they were well funded at that time. Now they're super funded since the pandemic.
They got
way more money than the first time I talked to them in the past year. So kudos to those guys. And of course, like you said, it's built off of Unreal, and so they have a closer relationship with Epic. I wouldn't be surprised if that turns into an acquirement at some point, because that's what Epic's been doing, man. They've been buying anybody that has any traction lately. And
you're in the latest news. Sony was one of many investors.
Yeah.
Another how much million dollars came into Epic?
Well, here we go. I got you right here.
Yeah. To fund the metaverse, right? To fund, like, because, you know, they got Fall Guys, they have Fortnite, and something else they mentioned, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
So there's these three games, and they want to basically turn these things into games as a service, huge connected universe, user generated content. They have a solid IP. Like they're going all in on it.
For sure. Yeah. What I love about Ready Player One is it really did the game industry a great service. Like a lot of times when games are portrayed, it's basically someone in their closet doing like a very very generalization of what games are, right? So to game developers, it doesn't fall. But like Ready Player One was actually inspirational. I was like, wow, this world would be totally around the corner where people can actually live like Second Life, right? And do all the RPG things to the max level, which is very realized, right? And so to me, the metaverse hasn't been realized to that respect. Of course, we see Roblox, we see Core. They're both kind of a little different. They're still server-based and it's very... separate, right? Little room still, right?
I mean, technology has limitations, you know.
Of course. Of course.
Let's just be real.
But in terms of game design, it isn't there yet. You're where you're one person and you're basically, if you were to recreate Ready Player One right now, you're that same character, RPG character, and you're jumping from little city servers to another and interacting. There hasn't been a game to that level of detail. It's basically cyberpunk as if everyone on the street is somebody, right? Not just a NPC.
Sure.
So, yeah, with the Epic support from Sony, I didn't know they had a relationship that strong. As part of that, $1 billion to support this long-term vision for this metaverse. And yeah, I mean, if anything, they are planning something big. They bought the Fall Guys parent company, but really it's Fall Guys, right? And Core is getting a lot of steam right now. Fortnite is still strong, even though it's lower. It's still over 100 million plus every month.
Yeah. Right?
So it's not really that low. It's pretty exciting because I think they are in that. All right. With respect to your company, you guys are there to actually do something. I really do think it's got to be the Titans that actually make this Ready Player One. It's not going to be indie. I'm sorry, dude, but it's not going to be indie. Not to this level, right? You might have like a breadcrumb of an idea, but you're not going to be fully realizing, right? It'll be Epic or someone else taking that formula and like times 1,000 or 1,000,000, right? So this past year, man, I've just been seeing Rocket League. We forgot Rocket League too. I mean, they bought that recently too. It could be something very minor steps of connecting, like you said, these little worlds, these licenses, and being able to carry the same account from Rocket League to Fall Guys to Fortnite, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the third one I couldn't remember was actually Rocket League.
Huge games, especially during the pandemic. These are huge, productive games as a service winners. And you know, that's just the game side, right? I kind of want to talk a little bit about how they spent over $300 million last year as part of their like publication of news on the Epic Games Store for exclusive. All those free games that you would get tagged on and we just download and never touch again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that costs $300 million. And of course. And Tim Sweeney was happy about it. Like, he was so happy. Of course. It's a winner. I do think that it slowed down a bit, right? I don't think there's been that much free games lately or as big.
No, there's more free games.
There's more free games now. So they're still going strong. Yeah. So they're going 2 years, $600 million. Okay.
Dude. It's like,
well, how do you feel? Is that working?
It's like this. No, it's like this, right? It's a strategy to gain users, right? Yeah. It's an investment in gaining users. And if you have a huge cash cow pouring in, you got investor money pouring in to even build an even bigger cash cow. It makes sense. It makes sense to get more users into your platform. Because at the end of the day, right, the Epic Game Store, yeah, you're going to sell games and all that. But it's a platform. Like, everything's connected, right? Fortnite's going to be connected to that. It's the same tool that you use to download Unreal Engine, right? So it's a platform they're building around everything. And it's well worth the investment. If then you get those folks connected to the Fortnite metaverse, the Rocket League metaverse, and you get them microtransactions, and you'll get even more money in return as you grow that user base. It's you got to spend money to make money, right? That's kind of the strategy there, I think.
Yeah, the lifetime value is something like mobile companies are very used to, right? Just getting someone into your system. And it's a very valuable thing to kind of realize the connection between from gamer to game developer, right? I think everybody who is a game developer started as gamers. And I think what Epic is doing with this strategy is very smart, man. You're already in the Epic launcher and you're just a click away from becoming a game developer at age 12, right? Yeah. So it's very smart. And you're basically having like a lifelong loyal customer from beginning to end that's right. Continuously going to spread the word, the love of the games, as well as the tools to make the games. It's very smart. And didn't realize they were that smart. Like, yeah. I mean, obviously they're Epic, right? They've been making hits forever, but I felt like there was a lull moment between Gears and Paragon where the company was lost for a while, right? In the period of Unreal Engine 3, especially, a lot of longtime AAA game developers were going for their own engine instead. And there was a big period of opting out of using Unreal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is still the situation today, right? All the biggest games use custom engines, right? And the only big game that doesn't is Fortnite. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yes, like that's still the case today, right? But then they got a really big money maker with Fortnite, or a big hit there. And are able to, and I think it's clear through like this metaverse focus that, you know, they're still focused on the engine and still focused on film and virtual production and like making and stuff. enabling creators and all of that, right? But there's less focus on the risky proposition of like making video games, right? Like it's all about let's create a platform that we can monetize, right? So
yeah. Well, mark my word, they're probably going to buy Core within the year.
Oh, why do they have to?
Yeah.
Right.
Why do they have to?
Why do they have to buy Core, right? If why?
Because it's Roblox. And look at Roblox.
But I mean, they're already building the Fortnite creators thing, Metaverse, and they just got new investment to focus on their IP. So why do they need Core?
So explain me the metaverse. So is the metaverse like a content creator thing, or I thought it was more like game focus?
Well, it's this is definitely how you think about it, right? Like people create a bunch of games, and then you create like a kind of a connected environment where you could go in and play these different types of games that people make, right? Or that are made by the dev teams themselves, and then you monetize.
That's core.
I don't see how they need Core if they're focused on Fortnite and all the other things.
I will say this.
I'm worried. I'm actually worried a bit because it's like, yeah, like why Core is built on top of Unreal Engine. Unreal's going to be doing something very similar. Like what? Like, it, I don't know how those two things can coexist, right?
I'll tell you this. They are all in to Fortnite. Their team majorly are kind of their best content creators of that company is working on Fortnite, right? No doubt about that. And then there's a secondary tier that's teaching it, right? And
I think some of their content creators are also working on the next things, like the movies and the
right, sure. But like, yeah, I mean, obviously internally they're always looking to upgrade and make the best stuff for the tools. Yeah. But there's been like on a hiring spree of acquiring talent and tools and technology to make them stronger. Yeah. So in that way, to kind of have this boost where Core have been having such a great traction and customer acquisition, right? Yeah. They might just go ahead and let's not start from scratch, start from where this is, whatever they're doing is working, and just balance it. So I still think that relationship, because they're still super friendly about it, right? I don't foresee like a PUBG scenario where they just take support them for this long and then take, right? I think they're matured since.
Yeah. Ever since then, like, I don't know if I would be as trusting,
I feel like they're more giving.
But you might be, you might be right. It might just be like, they're definitely getting all the love on the Epic Game Store right now.
Right.
You could be right about that.
Sure. Yeah. And, it's very smart for them to do that. I think, should have been on the ground floor with this guys. Yo, we got bought by Epic. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. They're doing a lot of moves. I mean, we talked about their game. They're talking about their metaverse, you know, another $1 billion. The one thing I do want to talk about, and I want to get your thoughts on, and this is more artist central, but being a programmer and a graphic engineer, right? Like, I would love to kind of hear your thoughts about the meta human thing.
It looks great. Period. Right. And like next topic, it looks fantastic.
It looks too good.
Right. No, it looks fantastic. Like the what they're promising, like actually the graphic fidelity part of it is one thing. And they've been doing hair shading for a while and strand simulation and all that stuff, and that stuff looks great.
Yeah.
But really what they're promising around like ML guided rigging seems like a little bit too good to be true there, right? Like it seems like that would be that's game changing, right? That's game changing for content creators, because like the rigging is time intensive.
Yeah.
And the rigging has a big part to do with the quality of the facial animation that you're seeing there. Right. Yeah.
And the thing about rigging and anything technical is it's there's a very methodical way of approaching it. So I can see it. Like a lot of games have this, and a lot of programs kind of thrive, like character creator, kind of making use of the, you know, Elder Scrolls, create your own avatar type of thing. It's like, so it's been the technique and the thoughts behind creating a character from scratch has been in the making for a long time. To officialize it in this way gives a lot of power. It's the same moves that you saw with mocap, with animation, the photo grammetry with environment. Right now it's meta human. It's like all the discipline gets a turn, basically.
But it's not even just that. Like with photogrammetry, you needed expensive equipment, and it was still time.
Get a library,
right? You need to build the library up, right? And with some other things, it's still like you need this expensive equipment. Yeah. Like what this is claiming is like, yo, just take your model, drop it in, like I will rig it. But you know,
I like
that. That seems almost too good to be true, almost, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really want some folks to start messing around with it with their own models and like, what is the actual process if you brought in a completely brand new model into this? Like how easy is it really? And if it's like super simple, like how it's kind of making it out to be, that's huge. That's a big advantage.
Yeah, man. It just amps up all games with realistic characters, really.
Yeah. But like at the same time, right, like this fidelity is fantastic. Like this is like super, super, super high fidelity, right?
Yeah, this is really
good. 80% of the games are nowhere near this.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the impressive.
And even if somebody was like, oh yeah, I want super like at this level, right? Yeah. They still have to be able to create the rest of the environment at that same kind of fidelity, which is time consuming and takes money, you know what I mean? And talent.
Well, not if you're at Epic, because you got mega scans and now you have meta human.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like they're clearly leading on, like, how do you create high fidelity things as easy as possible?
As quickly as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's exciting, man. Like, you know, any console jump within the first year and a year and a half, you kind of hear like a little bit of the same thing. And then right around this time frame, you know, coincidentally, right after the pandemic, where we're starting to see like, all right, this is really what next gen is about, or this current gen, right? This is what we've been promising. So we're seeing all these tools and awesome things being realized. Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine always says the same thing. He's like, show me the games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so I want to see what we actually end up building with this.
Yeah. You know? I mean, this already, you know, imagine that whole pipeline. Well, in the hands of a person.
Yeah, I mean, a pipeline's one thing, demos are one thing.
Yeah.
A video game is another thing.
Yeah. Does this work?
And that's what I want to see, right? Like a video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right around the corner, man. It seems to be cool.
It's cool. Actually, it's not just right around the corner, because the early access dropped again today, or was it yesterday? So you can download and actually start messing around.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening right now. Well, next topic, right? You know, by now most have finished Cyberpunk. Most have kind of buried the hatchet with those issues.
No, they have not, because the patch literally just came out like last week or whatever.
Right. So I haven't tried it, and I was kind of waiting for that patch to play with it again. I mean, I was on PC. I didn't see too much of the issues, but. Oh, I didn't get farther.
Tons of issues. There's tons of issues on PC.
All right. I didn't get far enough, basically. So the patch came out last week. And even then, I had heard of issues of being hacked, right? I mean, unfortunately, they were hacked, got messed with. So that delayed things even further. But regardless of all that drama, CD Projekt is hitting record revenue for 2020, of course, right? Even with all those Sony returns and digital online, they're doing just fine.
Right. I don't think Xbox returned anything. and then also like PC sales, like, man, you know that game sold to like almost everybody. So record revenue is not surprising at all here.
Yeah.
Like, at all. Yeah.
Yeah. 500 million, 560 million revenue, 300 million profit. That's great. I mean, that company is not even that big, right? CD Projekt Red, they're not in the thousands, are they? In terms of their internal core team. They seem like a 300-ish.
I think it might be more than that, but still.
Damn, they've grown. But that comes to show you why the CEO is not that stressed, right? Even if they did apology videos saying like, hey, calm down, we did everything wrong. They're looking at their bank account all year. It's like, hey, we're killing it this year with all these mistakes. Do you feel that is something to always fall back on? Like, we always have another chance. We just got to kind of hang on with this bad press for a little bit, or you see most of this, because even then, like, you remember, right? Everybody who was analyzing the situation, like, CD Projekt Red would never recover from this. The reputation's ruined forever. There's no point.
I think that's true. I think you know, once bitten, twice shy, right? I think this go around, it's going to be record revenues, but the next game may not be that. You know, it may still sell well, and they might still be fine, but I don't think the next game is going to be met with such bated breath, right? Because now it's like, oh, okay. The whole reason why Cyberpunk was met with such bated breath is because, like, Witcher 3, man, is a good game.
But it was a bad game first.
It had bugs. No, Witcher 3 had bugs and issues, of course, right?
Took time to fix it, yeah.
It was a good game
with
right? even when it came out. Right. And I think the hype that was generated for Cyberpunk was just
pretty
unsurmountable. I also think really the next gen transition played a big part in that.
Yeah.
Because they made a next gen game.
Yeah.
And try to squeeze it onto a PS4. And they were like, oh, wait.
Can't do that.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, that's actually pretty hard. And so I think all those things kind of play a part in that. You know what I mean? Like, which stuff, yeah. is a good game. Which is a good game. And I mean, in that class of game too, like there's, I think it's probably the best game in that class. Like it's just a good game. And so the hype was well warranted. And even when you look at Cyberpunk, like a lot of the parts of Cyberpunk that are like that, it's, yeah, a lot of the stuff that's kind of similar to Witcher 3, that stuff is good, man.
Yeah. Good. I mean, despite the bad press they had last year, I mean, the year before with the Witcher on Netflix show coming out, it was a badass show that I even liked. It reinvigorated a lot of people to check out the games. And so they got a huge boost off of that too. So financially the last 2 years, without looking at the press, they've been doing really well. For a blossoming company, just a few years ago, right? So, I'm glad. The unfortunate problem is that you would hear a lot of departures, you know, and it's just that all that stress that causes, nobody really sticks around until after the bonus payout. So even though they have the reputation, but people that built that reputation, you're basically having a new team again. And I don't think besides game developers, a lot of gamers know that, right? You're basically, if there's Cyberpunk 2 or anything, it's skeleton.
I don't think gamers know that at all, actually.
Yeah. And it's so they're going to continue buying, but
they know the brand. They know the brand, and they don't know that the dev team's completely different.
Yeah, there's a disconnect for sure. And whenever a big company like this does something like this, it kind of spills over to any other company. And AAA, I feel like not as bad as a couple years ago, but still pretty bad in most gamers' minds of being ripping off their $60, right? Not enough games have been out day one bug-free and fantastic. It's more like,
I mean, ever since like we could start downloading patches, the day one patches is life at this point, right? Like, yeah, you know, there's no games releasing bug-free day one anymore.
Yeah, man, I still remember the day when we were like shipping Call of Duty empty discs and telling everyone to download. I'm like, what? This is the thing now? It's like, what's the point of this?
Yeah.
Nostalgia. I don't know.
No, and back to that thing too. It's like, I was going to say something about Cyberpunk. Oh yeah, about the brand. Like, even some game developers don't know, because like I remember way back when Visceral Games announced their next game, right? Yeah. Dante's Inferno. And then everybody was like super excited about Dante's Inferno. And I was just like, why? And they're like, oh, it's Visceral. Dead Space is going to be, was so dope. And it's Visceral. So it's going to be, this one's going to be dope too. And I was like, man, that's a completely different team. Like, it's not the same team. Like, there's no way it's going to be, you know? So like branding works, turns out, right? And it will always work. So.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me to this next bit of news. So this kind of happened right after we did the last roundtable news episode. My good old buddy, my good friend, Bobby Kotick. Every year it seems around the first quarter financial, everyone just gets upset with this guy. I don't know why. That's my nice bud.
Oh, stop it.
Dude, did I tell you that I've met, he came to Sledge once? Of course, right? He came to Sledge once. Oh, man. I'm going to put it out there.
You're never going to work for Activision ever again. You know that, right?
He never listens to this. And if he listens to this, then I made it, buddy. But like, Kotick came to the office, one of those like circuit visits that, you know, CEOs would visit the office just to kind of remind themselves how powerful they are, right? But then, yeah, you stopped by Sledge, and my initial impression was like, wow, this guy's pretty short. And instantly realized he had a Napoleon complex, and it's like, wow, that shit is real. And so there was two people. So there was two people, right? So he's the main CEO, and then there's that vice president. I forgot his name at that time, Eric or something. Who would do all the like press, basically. Whenever there's a new Call of Duty, he would be on stage. He's that guy, right?
Yeah, man.
Complete opposite, right? Totally tired, bags under his eye. Every time I see him, he dropped by the office a few times. But Kodak, man, he just looked like he just got off his yacht, had a fresh tan, super relaxed, right? I was like, that's the difference, man. You got to go through that crap to eventually get to that yacht. But anyways, yeah, man, like his story was the most name dropping I've ever heard in anybody telling me anything. Right. I don't know if I told you this. Did I tell you this before? He would be he would do this, right? He would say, hey, yeah, I was hanging out with my friend Steve. Steve Jobs, right? So he would just do like these like nicknames, first name basis stuff. And it was the first time, and he's like, hey, Bobby, check this out. Take a look at this. And he showed me the first iPhone. And when I first saw it and I was playing with it, I knew that this was going to change the world. And then he followed that up with this one time I was in the office of Nintendo, right, with Miyamoto, right? And he was showing me their next system, and it was the Wii, right? And as I was playing with the nunchucks and moving around with the motion sensors, I knew that this was going to change the world. Like, it was like he would just embed himself in these stories behind these brilliant innovations in the game industry as if he had anything to do with it. Right. So I was like, oh, cool. So that was an hour of that. So, otherwise pretty nice guy, but, and what else would he do? He would say like, oh, you know, when I did an investment of one company, it was the biggest check I ever written, $100 million. It's like, oh my God, dude, really? The whole time, just braggadocious about his, you know, how much, yeah, we get it, you're rich. And so every year when I see this, it's like, this is why, dude. This guy takes guarantees. He doesn't do that $1 salary stock options bullshit. I'm sure he has a lot of stocks, but he's like, no, bitch, $200 million. In my bank account. See you next year, right?
No, okay. Let's frame it up because I'm reading the actual story here.
All right,
let's give him some credit. I also talked to a friend of mine recently, and he was big on CEO over getting overpaid. Do CEOs get overpaid? In general, yes. Is Bobby Kotick
the most overpaid?
I wouldn't say he's the most, but is he definitely overpaid? Yes. However, he also signed a contract, right? And in his contract,
yep.
Like if he
gets does the stock X price, amount of things, yeah.
If he gets the stock price to a certain point, like he gets paid,
gets right? paid.
And the board at Activision, they signed that agreement. And the stock price has gone crazy because of Warzone,
the pandy and Warzone,
and the pandemic, and so my man about to cut this check.
Respect,
and you know, like that's, you know, maybe companies should not be signing these kind of crazy ass deals.
Board members got pissed. That was one of them. Like all these accusations of you being overpaid was from the board members.
But here's the thing though. Like board members can't get pissed because the stock price is like triple.
And yeah, they should be happy,
right? They pay too, right? Who should be pissed?
Yeah,
is the workers. People they've laid off in the last couple of years, right?
And yeah, that's the contrast.
Yep. And they literally laid off people this year, right? And so in order to keep the stock price up and keep the revenue flowing so, you know, so that payout could be made, they laid off people that have to go look for a job during a pandemic. That is bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it happened pretty consecutively right after Google cracked the whip and say, why aren't you guys done with that AAA game under 2 years? That's crazy. I gave you a year and a half, even though we discussed 5 years. Why is it not done? Right. So that kind of, you know, as one head role, it leads to another, and that was Activision. And yeah, it's been 2 years in a row where Bobby Kotick has been like rolled into this overpaid or like the most paid CEO in any corporation, right? I do agree with you, right? This is I'm not going to Jason Schreier this, right? Saying how this is unfair. It's like there's a contract clearly in place, and he got his, and it did double. It like $56 to 90, 92. Did it triple?
It tripled.
Well, there you go. And honestly, yeah, last year, what was the game?
Last year it went from 56 to 92.
Yeah.
But like in 2016, the share price was at 32, man.
Yeah.
So it's damn near triple.
I should have kept it. Anyways, and to be fair, last year was a huge year. Of all the battle royales during the pandy, it was Warzone, right? I didn't really hear much of Fortnite, even Apex. Even though Apex, I saw a recent headline. They recently got 100 million players under 2 years. 100 million players. That's impressive. That's huge.
Is that impressive?
Respawn. It's amazing. But like supposedly they're in like third place, right? Third place is 100 mil. So, you know, imagine what Fortnite is, and then imagine, obviously, what this game, Warzone. I think Warzone is probably number one last year. It has to be. Like, everybody I knew of all ages were talking about Warzone. So,
I mean,
that game still sucks.
The PUBG guys gotta be upset.
Oh, yeah, they're upset.
They gotta be upset. Like, everybody's making all this money.
Well, I heard PUBG is doing really well on mobile right now. Like that seems to be their main focus, right? They still have PC players. I don't know who, but they're still making money.
They started all this, but it's crazy.
Well, it's their fault. They shouldn't have trusted support to hold on to their code and not look at it. I would love to see that book one day, right? The real details and stories between Epic and PUBG, right? I don't think it's discussed enough. Like the only time I actually heard anybody talking about that exact case and how fucked up that was me on the podcast for like an hour straight. Like I was surprised how underreported it was. I'm surprised I don't see Jason Schreier on that shit. I mean, like that dude is always causing trouble. Speaking of which, did you have something to add? Because I'm going to transition.
I don't know. Do you transition?
All right. Well, Jason Schreier, dude is like doing one viral news piece to another. Recently was talking about Sony specifically because they're having a hot year. The main thing about how they treat their lower tier first party, quote unquote, third party, I would say, companies kind of pushed to the back, right? There was a story that was kind of talked about how Days Gone, they were pitching for the sequel, but now, you know, they scrapped it and disbanded basically the group, and now they're doing it internally instead. Same thing goes with The Last of Us Remaster. It was being handled by the San Diego PlayStation group, which were kind of like the first party outsourcing team for all their Last of Us and basically all the Sony games. That was taken away from them. And the main angle that was taken in the article with this, I like Jason. I like reading his stuff, but I feel like he knows where he is in this industry as that guy, right? So I think he goes too far that way by saying that, oh, they're being unfair to and being, you know, mistreatment, right? But in reality, you know, the remaster and The Last of Us probably sucked. And that's why he's like, no, we can't let you keep doing this.
Well, yeah. It's like this. Like, he's carving out his niche and he wants to stand up for the game developers because, like, Lord knows nobody else is, right?
Yeah.
One. So he's going to carve out the niche and make that his thing. And that's a good way of continuing to get paid. Like, cool. Sure. And bringing attention to the issues Although, like, I'm finding, here's what I'm finding.
What are you finding?
Is when he brings attention to the issues, all of us game developers read articles and care.
Yeah.
I find a lot of the gamers are just kind of like, well, I don't care. Give me my
really?
Time. Yeah.
Really?
I'm
these are going viral just with game devs.
I'm finding that, like, I, or at least the game players that I'm have my ear to the street to,
yeah.
The vast majority of them are like, nah, I'm good. Who cares? Just give me a good game, yeah.
That's probably true, man.
Right? Yeah. You know, and so. Yeah, I guess it's good for all us game developers to hear the stories and just nod in silent agreement. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I don't know how much of a needle it's moving. Maybe it's helping the Game Worker Unite Union, maybe. But yeah, like, I don't know how much of a needle it's moving, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, my kind of to tie it to the beginning, I think. The last 5 years or so, we're seeing a huge influx more than ever before from gamers transitioning to game developers, right? So obviously there's a lot more game developers now than before, a lot more access, yeah. A lot more talent, because the tool's getting easier. And that number is just always growing every day, where people are starting to care of what's happening within the industry. So that's always a good thing. I'm at least finding younger people, listening to the podcast, who are more understanding of the issues of the game industry, versus us, where we're kind of like learning how we're getting fucked as we are on the job.
are we learning at this point? I'm learned at this point, man.
No. At this point, we're learned, but we learn. We were learning on the job versus people coming sure. into the job knowing. Oh, you know, be careful.
Now they have news stories.
And they have access to people like us, to Jason Schreier, right? So.
Yeah.
In terms of what we were 8 years ago, I see a lot more people who are actually making games, and beginners, students especially, a lot more aware. These are things that I didn't know till like 3 years in, when I'm in a meeting and someone threw me under the bus. It's like, whoa, what was that? I was like, I didn't know that this was done in the game industry. It's like, you know, well, he's trying to become a lead. So that's what happens. Very much not prepared in school for that type of thing, but I'm seeing that now, which is good. What does that mean? Well, I mean, that's the future, right? That's the future of a lot of these leads, you know, these students who are kind of aware, who are trying to avoid repeating the bad habits and problems. Hopefully that turns into a more healthy type of environment, right? It's a very slow change in the direction of the needle, but I think that is where we're heading. It has to be, right? How many QA assholes that become studio heads are we still making? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we're making less and less of that, where there's like someone has a chip on their shoulder and suddenly becomes a manager, right? I hope so. I don't know your feeling about that, because obviously you've been in the industry longer than I have, from when you started to here. Do you have a general sense that younger developers have a better awareness of what's going on?
I think so. Yeah. Cause like, through some of the kids I mentor or kids that get presented to me, to answer questions or mentor, I'm finding a lot of them ask
better questions.
I heard there's a lot of like long hours in the industry.
Yeah.
And they're asking like these kind of questions about crunch and put in. And so they're definitely way more informed than I was, at least when I got right. Cause like, you know, like the internet, right? There's this information is just way more available. These days. Definitely.
Yeah, like even like 6 years ago when I started teaching at these colleges, I was still in the phase of, yeah, you're gonna You're going to have to crunch. You're going to have to prove yourself. You're going to have to do all this shit that we went through to get to where we are. But that tone has changed. Like, if I were to teach in front of students, like, you shouldn't take that to that extreme, right? You should respect and learn from the seniors, right? Not to try to outpace them. Because I think seniors more than ever are more valuable now than before. Because you see something like Metahumans, right? As a character artist, you should be scared. But in a way, adapt to, if you're that guy who's painting eyelashes all the time, yeah, don't do that anymore. You gotta take more of a creative role of taking the tools available and make things better, right? But in that very much same way, I feel like a lot of studios are leaning more heavily on those type of seniors who are less about content creators, and studios are in that way. The core team are trying to be smaller, right? At the same time, not expand. And
well, yeah, because they want to
make money. Yeah, yeah. Right. But more than ever now than before, I'm seeing that trend where seniors and leads are being respected in that way. Because I felt like in the outsourcing few years ago, right, everyone was outsourcing, it was a cheaper alternative. There was a few years there that everyone felt like, if you're inside a studio, at least I felt I had a period where, like, oh, I'm not as valued because they can outsource that, right? So I feel like because the tools are getting stronger, everybody are inching closer and closer to being basically like you, man. Like, more and more people are like, the more of a programmer you can become, even if you're an artist, the better, you know, just becoming a technical artist. That seems to be the future proofing, either a concept.
They can still outsource you, Brandon.
I'm the master of outsourcer now. Yeah. That's how I flip that script. It's true. This thing, man, there's so many tools going on. There's Promethean AI. We had Luis Correll who worked at Houdini for a long time, a few episodes ago. And yeah, I mean, the industry is moving towards replacing content creating.
Procedural generations becoming more and more and more and more
the thing.
As the games get bigger and bigger and bigger, though, right? But I still think like, if you're gonna make a handcrafted, small,
stylized, yeah,
very stylized, very special thing, you don't need an army, but you need an artist,
some care, some love, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, if you're just going to do something very unique, that there isn't someone that have created the tool to mass produce that unique stuff. Like, if someone were make Cuphead, right, and that's the thing that everyone's replicating, there will be a programmer that eventually can make something that can recreate that in a faster pace. But like you said, right, if it's super unique, no one's going to dedicate the time to create a tool like that. What's the point, right? So I mean, that's the same rule for anybody who's afraid of being replicated through a machine. It's like, you find that uniqueness, find a margin that works for you, right, that's profitable for you, but not somehow Epic looks at it and say, hey, we can do something like this but better. I'm gonna watch Core, man. I'm very curious if they're gonna repeat that history. I think they're doing it right. They're championing it, right? It's on the Epic store. They funded it themselves a couple of times too. So
well yeah, they, you know, like, they started out pretty small, slowly built up, you know, got funding recently, got a big chunk of funding recently. Like, yeah, I think they're going in the right direction. I'm interested to see how it turns out. I'm interested to see if Epic just snatches them up.
I think they're going to buy it.
Comes true. I'm interested.
Mark my words, this is April 15th. I think by December, if Core, well, I mean, it's on the Epic Store, so I'm betting they're getting a big boost from that in terms of viewership and participation. This metaverse thing is a huge boost. I wouldn't be surprised if part of the strategy is to see how this Epic Store feature brings it up to a number that makes sense for them to act on it, right? I think if anything, this is a test. So And with Roblox going IPO and killing it right now, right? And all that financial information is more and more public. Yeah, Epic wants a piece of that shit. And Core Day One has been thinking like that, and they're ahead of the curve using the very engine that they're championing. I think it's a perfect marriage. And shit, man. Dude, this last year, this is what I hear, man. The richer got richer and the poor got poorer. Yeah. And man, people got filthy rich. I was looking at the billionaire list.
Is that different from any other year?
But this past year, especially, all that wealth got distributed upwards.
The curves like turned.
Very big. Yeah, there was a record numbering of billionaires last year. And in total, more trillions ever in the world history was made last year. So there you go. How does that relate to you as an individual, as a game developer? That's why I think it's important to look at these, you know, listen to these roundtable news, listen to us kind of moan and bitch and give warnings, because it is a warning sign. You know, MetaHuman is the future. Every art discipline is going to see this happen to them. What's left? Visual effects. Right? I feel like Houdini did that. They just need to simplify it and they'll get there, where visual effects is like a press of a button. Right. And lighting, same thing. Right. It's just a matter of time.
Lighting's harder, but there's definitely all sorts of ML research going into that.
Yeah. There you go. Right. If it's can be repeated in numerical form and you throw some stupid AI thing in it.
Yeah.
Just capture information and just recreate it. Yeah. I mean, that's what HDRI is.
nothing replaces the artistic eye. You know, sometimes you still need that, but you're just going to need less of that.
You know what I pictured when you said that? Just a bum pointing at his glass eye. It's like, all right, you keep that. I just made something right now, as you were saying that, way faster.
Why am I over here standing up for artists right now?
Because you're in that comfy spot of like being protected forever as a programmer. So you have this.
I don't know. I don't even know if that's true, because then people are saying that machine learning is going to replace programmers. You know, like, so.
This is the problem. This is the problem.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the problem. This is what I foresee, right? If you, the fucking programmer, one day can say, hey, I can make characters too, right? That's today. It's done, dude. It's fucking done. Because you programmers already look down on us, right?
What?
And every day we're giving you reasons. It's like, yeah, I don't need you, right? Artists can't do the same with programmers. It's like, we do need you. I mean, yeah, we have Blueprint, maybe, right?
No, I'm going to be real. I'm going to shout it out there right now.
Yeah.
I've always said this. I've said this a million times, right? And I learned this lesson over the years. A lot of really good looking games that look great, games that are fantastic.
Yeah.
Ship on terrible ass code.
Yeah.
And it's really the art that makes that stuff shine.
Right.
100%. Right. Yeah. And that's it. Right. And so if there's any notion that, I'm Mr. Programmer, I'm better than you. I get paid more and I got my degrees. Like, yeah, nah, man. Like, I think it's a symbiotic relationship.
I thought that way too.
I've learned that over the years.
But then Minecraft happened and it completely flipped my world. I was like, this is the first of many. This is going to be a day where programmers can just shit on art. And I see it on Netflix, like Minecraft, the show, it's an art style now. It's like, this is a thing.
I think it's just that it's an exception to the rule.
I think it's the first of many. What other game? Roblox.
No,
I'm telling you, man, there's a trend that's happening upwards. Dude, Roblox is the ugliest game I've ever seen.
No, hold on. Roblox used to look much worse, and Roblox has gotten a lot better looking over the years. right? It still doesn't look great today, but it's gotten a lot better looking over the years.
Yeah, all right. I'm upgrade from crap to shit is not much. I'm an artist, bro. I'm giving you props. It's like a programmer figured this out on his own and said, I don't care about art, and been killing it ever since, like two times in a row. Like, so I mean, Core, the funny thing about Core
is better, right?
It's kind of replicating that. But there is a weird thing about the more detailed, even with Fortnite art style, right? There's a certain threshold, it seems, where automatically if you pick a style, it just maxes out all the casual players just right then and there. So there's this weird balancing act, right? Mm-hmm. That you constantly have to struggle with as being an artist or design being king, right? Even Fall Guys, right? Fall Guys is not, it's an ugly game, right?
No,
it's an ugly game as in the character is not that great, right? It's very simple. The choruses are super simple. There's not art style, right? And they're starting to figure it out.
No, hold on.
They're starting to figure it out. No, traditional art style.
Stop.
Yeah.
There's for sure an art style.
Yeah.
Right. I would not call it ugly. I would definitely call it simple. Right. But I would never call Fall Guys.
This is what I'm comparing to, right?
Here's the stuff I always talk about with people, right? I think when I look at art, I always look for a consistent language.
Yeah.
Right. And if you do that, then at least it doesn't look jarring when you see different random stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And definitely Fall Guys, Fortnite, Pixar movies, all these things, right? All have a very consistent art style.
Sure.
It's simple, colorful, playful, enjoyable. Like they have that, right?
So of course.
I would never call it what I would call ugly is like Skyrim, right? Right?
But because there was effort in it. Yeah, because I'm not dismissing Fall Guys as being like completely ugly, right? But they're like, even if you compare Fall Guys to Fortnite, right? You can tell that one required a lot more research to stay consistent. And the other one was kind of like, I'll keep the values as is and call it a day, right? Like, in terms of simple, just to kind of end this, is Nintendo, right? And any Nintendo games, right? Those are very simple, stylized, not too complicated. But you can tell that there was like a certain amount of attention and effort behind that to make it so, right? So Fall Guys, I don't see that, right? Fall Guys, like, you modeled something, you colored it, right? And maybe you kept the color the same on the next stage, right? This is not like heavily researched. No. It's like that student that study all night to do something and turn it in, and the other student that didn't do anything and they got the same grade, right? This is kind of that situation where
you're hating right now.
Hating right now, but they're only now discovering and finding their footing for Fall Guys with all the costumes. Like, all right, now they're starting to realize it, right? At the beginning, it was design focus. This is, at least as an artist, I can see is like, I know when I can turn in half ass work and still call it a day, because you can make things look good by default, right?
You're hating me.
I love Fall Guys, but they could do better than that, even if that's the style, right? Not to complicate things, but to push it. There's room to push, right? If you give it to a different team.
Hold up. What's that team, like three people?
Which one? Fall Guys? Yeah. Fall Guys, we actually had them on. Started with two guys, and now they're like 60 people. So it's a small team.
So you had them on your show, you're over here hating on them right now.
I love the game. It's a fun game. But in terms of art, dude, come on. You can't tell. I'm not going to give you like that much credit. It's a basic gymnasium art. It's very easy to do. Like, so to me, it's not
complicated. I never claim anybody that puts a game in a box easy to do. Never.
It's easy in terms of art. Yeah, it is. It's it's very quick to make that. It's a very design focused game. So I'm not taking away from that.
I'll never fix my mouth to ever say something like that ever. Not gonna do it.
It's impressive that what they've done. Right? They don't need me to praise, but
Their wallet alone will just like knock you in the face and like.
Yeah, they're using their wallets to muffle my noise right now. Of saying how their game is not great. I'm just saying art-wise, it's not that impressive, right? You're not seeing that on some kind of a museum as like a work of art of any sort.
I think I think when I see stuff like that, that's like super simple like that, I almost think it's harder. I think it's stylized. It's harder to
stylize is hard. Yeah, I'm not arguing against that. But that ain't stylized, man. That's
like,
half.
I mean, when it's like super photorealistic, you go out with like big ass cameras and like take
pictures. Yeah, now it is.
Yeah. Like how hard is that? That just costs money and time. It's not exactly hard, right? You know what I mean?
You'll be careful with that, man. You're starting to sound like the. What were those paintings with red dots in the middle of it? This is way more complicated than that realist you drawing from the 18th century. Right? Sorry. Yeah. All right, guys, stop. It's beginning to become that way in game development. Just mark my words, man. Now people are like shitting on realistic art. And in a way, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of more tools to make it easier now, but stylized art, there's a degree.
But also I think honestly, like every day the human eye looks at realism.
Yeah.
Right. And so when something's like slightly off, you notice it right away.
It's more interesting for sure.
You know, so when you see something stylized with a consistent art style, like it's just, and it's pleasing. You know what I mean?
It's longer lasting too.
It lasts. You look at it five years from now and it'd be like, oh yeah, that still looks dope.
Yep. You know what
I mean? And that's also why I think Nintendo just kills it. You know what I mean?
Nintendo's very smart, but you don't see me here shitting on Nintendo's style as art.
I would just end this call right now.
Just Fall Guys. Fall Guys is just one step above Minecraft, in my opinion.
Wow.
There's nothing great about that. There's nothing inspiring about that art style. It's like, it's just a greatly designed game. But art-wise, it's just mediocre. Anyways, that concludes this month's roundtable. This is the best place to kind of get updated. Like you guys and I have mentioned every week, you guys be prepared, man. Get ready. You're going to lose your job, if not to a younger version of you, to these AI-driven tools that Ray and his friends are making every day to kind of make us irrelevant. That's that's the next 5 years, in my opinion.
We still love y'all.
Yeah, until you don't need us anymore. But like, man, I'm glad you're almost there. I don't know if this year's GDC is already a digital, right? So there's nothing going on this year.
I think it already happened.
Did it? There you go. Didn't matter. So next year, but hopefully before then, right? I get to see you up there, and we'll hang out again.
For sure.
Have some COVID-free parties.
Like I said, end of month, getting the vaccine.
All right.
I'm definitely getting out of here, going on vacation, June,
all
July.
Right. All right.
What's up?
All right. Let's do this. Ready. I'm done with this year. Cool, man. Well, thanks a lot for dropping by and giving us your wisdom. So happy that you're still a programmer. You had the foresight to stick with that. Now we got to all be programmers someday. But as always, you can find Ray on his Twitter handle, Waterass.
WARASS.
Yes. So tweet at him with all your opinions. He would love to kind of talk to you and battle with you. Or, you know, at any point, jump in their Discord channel. It's available on GameDevUnchained.com. But see y'all. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give GameDev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.